Hey everyone, you're listening to But Why Though the Podcast, the podcast where Kate, Matt, and myself, Adrian, talk about the things people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcast, or wherever you're listening to us on. It helps people find us, and it helps us find you. And if you want to support us a little more, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. As one of our lovely patrons, you get access to episodes early, along with show notes, But Why Though swag, and personalized content. But really, we're just happy you're here. Enjoy the show, and welcome to the Familia.
Today we are talking about Mr. Rogers. And as always, I'm your host, Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, Matt.
Hello.
And our very special guest, who is like a hybrid of Steve Rogers and Fred Rogers, Alex.
Hey guys, you are far too kind.
Don't let him fool you. Alex is literally the nicest person I've ever met in my entire life, ever.
I appreciate that.
So, just if you haven't listened to our other episodes where Alex is on, I feel like he's on at least like once every other month.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because you're great. He is from What We Talk About When We Talk About Podcasts, the Game Boys podcast about co-op gaming, and he is the assignment editor at Frightday.com. Did I get it all?
That is everything.
First off, we want to say thank you so much to our patrons, Abigail, Charles, and Lizzie. Thank you all for your support. It really means a lot to us.
Thank you.
Thank you, lovely patrons. We love you.
And to all our old patrons, too, for all the lovely support over all of the months.
Yeah. Oh, that was so kind.
Yeah.
Matt gets pretty sentimental sometimes.
He does. I've left it in on a couple of episodes. I don't remember where they were, but they felt like he said like really nice things the last few episodes.
It's usually around numbers, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever works.
I do love when you bring the numbers into it and start breaking down why statistics can't always be trusted.
I still think you're right that Matt needs to start his own podcast called Sometimes Numbers Lie.
It would be so good.
I also want to welcome Pilots and Petards, a new podcast, to our network. They are really great people. They take the pilot episode of a whole bunch of different series and break it down and decide whether it's a good episode or a bad episode, and if it wants them, and if it makes them want to keep watching. So welcome to the But Why Though family, or should I call it the Familia?
The Familia. I really want them to go, like, I know like they don't do podcasts like Pilots, but I want them to go back and like listen to our Tomb Raider episode and be like, man, how do these people make it to 71 episodes?
Kate and I were on their Batman Beyond episode.
It was super fun with Jimbo and Drew, and Mo is also one of the hosts. So thank you guys for joining us, and make sure you follow and subscribe to them. And here is their little promo.
Kaboom! Ah, holy crap, look at all these petards. It's like I can't start a new show without exploding in my face.
Kaboom! I know, right? I wish there were three charismatic, IRL physically attractive podcast hosts who could help us avoid petards, a real word, by the way, non-discriminatory. Don't wander out there alone. Leave it to the experts. Pilots and Petards, we watch shows so you don't have to. And now with 33% less white dudes, thanks to me.
We do it for you, Internet. We do it for you.
Pilots and Petards. We talk about pilots. We talk about TV. We take your mind off of things. The real world is horrible.
Join the rank of Hoister by stopping at our website, pilotsandpetards.com, and you can be the podcast you want to see in the world. Every day we hoistlin' at Pilots and Petards Podcast.
Now, to start off this episode, like we always do, we're going to start with a question. which is, did you watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood growing up as a kid?
No.
Okay, that was very strong. Maybe you should have, Matt.
What?
This explains a lot.
No.
Do you want to explain?
No.
What did you watch as a kid? What substituted Mr. Rogers for you? Nothing. Did you watch the SNL Mr. Robinson with Eddie Murphy?
Yeah.
No. I did not.
What was your children's programming?
I watched a lot of Discovery Channel.
That's good.
That is good.
And Animal Planet.
I didn't have cable, so I watched PBS.
Well, I guess it depends on when we're talking about when I was a kid.
Like a kid, so like your formative years.
I mean, I watched some cartoons, but I didn't really watch a lot of like stuff on TV.
Yeah, he was reading his...
Say I was outside doing stuff?
No, he was reading statistics books about baseball, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I do. I did have a lot of books with numbers. I did have a lot of games that just, like, did math problems and memory thing.
See, I remember. I'm telling
you,
I remember,
if you can teach your kid to remember everything, you don't have to learn anything.
Parenting Tips with Matt, another podcast coming to you on the But Why Though Network.
It sounds counterintuitive, but really you do learn everything by being able to remember everything, but in reality, do you really learn it, or do you just remember it?
Well, I watched Mr. Rogers growing up. Mostly because we didn't have cables, so PBS was like Reading Rainbow, Zoom. Those are kind of just the shows we had in our house all the time. Zaboomafoob. But Mr. Rogers was always really good. I remember that it was at the time where Goosebumps had like the puppet, the evil puppet.
Oh, Slappy the Dummy. Yeah, Night of the Living Dummy.
That terrified me.
It's
but
awful.
I was never afraid of the puppets for Mr. Rogers, but I think it was just because of the voices he did, which he did all of the voices for all of his puppets.
It was great. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I also watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when I was a kid. Not, like, a ton, and definitely not as much once I started going to school, but, like, preschool, that was definitely a thing that I watched.
Yeah, and I think that was, like, the target demographic.
Yeah, it is.
Like, because he got his degree in early childhood education.
Yeah. And it, like, yeah, and, like, the stuff that he's showing kids even is, like, yeah, this is preschool stuff. But, yeah, I grew up watching that show, and I feel like it probably shows a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
What are you trying to say, Alex?
There are two edges of the spectrum. Jesus. You are here, and Alex is here.
Matt, I like you just the way you are.
Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers would say that this day is special just because you're you.
Oh, no. Yeah, I watched Mr. Rogers when I was a kid for a lot of the same reasons that Kate did. Because PBS was my jam back in the day. You bringing up Zoom makes me want to do a Zoom episode, because Zoom was
the Zoom.
Yeah, so good. I was like, I applied to be a Zoom kid. I did not get it.
I did too.
But yeah, I like I watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when I was a kid. I think I caught it like when they were doing the re-syndication, or when they were redoing, because they had so many episodes.
So
and they
many.
Basically just went back and played all the episodes. So I remember like watching episodes that like looked old. And, like, he had aged, like, the next week, and I couldn't understand what was going on. Kind of back to, like, not understanding, like, that, like, this dude just doesn't do this, like, live. This was recorded.
Right.
To thinking that Samuel Jackson got eaten by raptors.
Well, the same logic. It was all a lie, Adrian.
Exactly.
I had the realization when watching the documentary that I did not know how many episodes he made. I assumed that he was just kind of doing it indefinitely.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt.
Which, I mean, honestly, the episodes and the way that he approaches things are relatively timeless. Like, yeah. I feel like he kind of made a point to be like, we're going to talk about big picture things, not like how to program a VCR.
You know what? Seeing all the people are today, I think they should have taught how to program a VCR.
Oh, it would have helped.
It would have helped a lot.
Hackerman plugged in a VCR.
Oh my god, Matt.
I didn't watch Mr. Rogers, but I did know how to plug in all of our VCRs and was pretty much the only person in my family knew how to record anything.
Is that why you're half robot?
Sure.
Why didn't you record Mr. Rogers and watch it later when you were done wiring everything.
Which, that actually ties into one of the But Why Those.
It does.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. This episode is all about Mr. Rogers. His name was Fred McFeely Rogers, which is why he had Mr. McFeely as the postman that would bring all the, like, the messages and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was an American television personality, musician, puppeteer, writer, producer, and a Presbyterian minister. He was known as the creator, music composer, and host of the educational preschool television series Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and that ran from 1968 to 2001.
I never saw a single episode during that time frame.
You were born in 1968, so that is shocking. Because that was about when you were watching Mission Impossible, right?
I have seen more Mission Impossible episodes than Mr. Rogers episodes.
Old man Matt.
I love it.
I was not born in 1968.
And the show featured Rogers' kind, neighborly, avuncular persona, which nurtured his connection to the audience. He was trained as an ordained minister, and Rogers ended up being really displeased with the way television addressed children at the time, and he began to write and perform in the local Pittsburgh area, and he did shows for, like, youth. And in 1968, Eastern Educational Television Network began nationwide distribution of his new show on WQED. Over the course of, like, 3 decades, Rogers became a television icon of children's education, entertainment, and education. Rogers received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, 40 honorary degrees, and a Peabody Award. He was inducted into the Television Hall of Fame and was recognized in 2 congressional resolutions. He was ranked number 35 of TV Guide's greatest TV stars of all time.
I do need to see the 34 that beat him.
Adrian, go to the Google.
This is very true. We kind of want to know who is the top.
Go to the Google, Adrian.
I got it.
TV Guide, 50 greatest TV stars.
So the real question is, TV Guide still around?
It is.
They are. Okay.
But they're like magazine size now, and I don't like that. I'm nostalgic for that smaller.
The small books are cool. I do like the small books.
Yeah, such a weird really time.
Cool. I just remember watching the TV Guide channel and like waiting for 15 minutes because I'd look away when the show, when the little thing.
That was death. That was one of the worst things.
That's why you bought the little book. So you didn't have to wait.
I know.
And then there were the collectible covers.
Grandma had a little book.
Yes, I did have collectible covers.
My grandma got mad when I took her book one time.
Because she really needed it?
Well, she didn't because she had all the novellas memorized when they were happening, but she still wanted it. It's like, Grandma, you only watch Christina and Ricky Lake and your novellas. Like, you don't need this.
Is Ricky Lake still around? I do remember that.
Like, is she still alive or is her show still on?
Well, I know her show's not on, but
because Jenny Jones sort of tanked daytime talk shows.
Yeah. Oh, my grandma actually just watched really bad daytime talk shows in the Spanish and English versions.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Yes.
I have seen more Ricky Lake episodes than Mr. Rogers.
Maury was the best, and he's still on.
Adrian, he is still on.
Why does your face look pained?
Because I don't understand this list.
give us some highlights.
So Lucille Ball is number one.
Okay.
This is also 1996.
And this is of all time.
Yeah, and this is like 1996 of all time. Like, yeah.
I love Lucy. Makes sense.
Yeah, like that. I mean, that makes sense. Oprah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. In 1996, before we knew he was a rapist, Bill Cosby at 9.
Oh,
makes sense.
That didn't age well.
Dick Van Dyke. You know who's 11? Just guess. You'll never, ever guess who's 11.
Jerry Springer?
Fonzie.
Bart Simpson.
Lassie.
What?
Who?
They ranked Lassie higher than Mr. Rogers.
Beat Mr. Rogers.
What the hell?
Get the cheese knife, Lassie. Get the cheese knife.
Oh my god, Lassie. I'm hurt, and I feel like this is an affront to Mr. Rogers.
That's a cheese knife, Lassie.
You know who's number 23? Miss Piggy. Miss Piggy beats out Mr.
Rogers. This list is garbage.
I identify with Miss Piggy.
So, like, more than, like, Kermit the Frog's not even, like,
really? Kermit the Frog's not on here?
I mean, Miss Piggy's better, but
I think you might be in the minority.
I mean, Kermit's left-handed, so I kind of have to like him.
See?
Wait, Alex, are you left-handed?
Yeah.
Matt's so left-handed.
It's a hard life.
It is hard.
Is it? Yeah, is there anything else on that list that's really awful before we get back to what Roseanne, we were talking about?
Roseanne also beats
that. That didn't age well.
Yep.
And The Simpsons are at 48. I thought you would like that. Like, all of The Simpsons. Like,
I do like that. And 48, it feels appropriate.
Yeah.
The Bullwinkle Show is actually higher than Mr. Rogers.
Why?
Jerry Seinfeld
is higher.
Okay.
Bob Hope, I'm okay with. Edward R. Murrow, I'm okay with.
Tom Selleck's higher?
I mean, Magnum P.I. and Friends.
I think the funny thing is people don't realize Magnum P.I. like didn't last that long, I don't believe.
No, it didn't.
It lasted in our hearts.
That mustache is eternal.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's actually not, like, everybody, like, portrays that show as, like, this long-lasting TV show, and it's only, like, 5 seasons.
I mean, the top ones aren't that bad. It's, like, Lucille Ball, Johnny Carson, Jackie Gleason, I don't know who James Garner is, Mary Tyler Moore, Oprah Winfrey, Carol Burnett, Michael Landon, Bill Cosby, and Dick Van Dyke ran out the top 10.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, at the top 10. I'm not okay with all the people that beat out Mr. Rogers.
Oh, for sure. No, I completely agree.
A dog. Like, I love Lassie. I had a stuffed animal. My great grandma gave it to me. I had it like forever. But like, should not be above Mr. Rogers.
It's not a personality.
Roseanne Barr is number 28.
Yeah,
that's upsetting. Yeah. Before we get back on topic, quick podcast pitch: Relisted, where we just take lists and critique them.
Ooh, down.
Oh, I do that all the time. We don't need, like, all we gotta do is record it.
I'm telling you, Alex, you can make so much money this way.
Just pitching. Just I'll create a network where it's just all my ideas and other people doing them.
Considering all I do is I've already done this like multiple times, just yelling at Kate about this. So all I need is you need to like record it, and I've already done it, so we're good.
Never send him a list because he really just yells at me from the other room about why it's wrong.
I love this. I'm actually really surprised
that you didn't pull up the list before this. Because I knew Matt was going to ask as soon as you read the list, he was going to ask who was number one.
Well, Alex asked.
But Matt was going to do it if Alex didn't ask.
This is also accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back on topic now. Yeah. So, in addition to having all of these, like, I guess, awards and, like, notoriety and stuff, like, in pop culture, he also has several buildings and artworks in Pennsylvania dedicated to his memory, and the Smithsonian Institute displays one of his trademark sweaters as a treasure of American history. On June 25th, 2016, the Fred Rogers historical marker was placed near Latrobe, Pennsylvania, in his memory, and they also do exhibitions of the Mr. Rogers set, where they have like the front room and the castle, and it is really good. It's really cool, and they like shake that around and show it. So, I really don't have much more history other than that. I mean, he had a degree in theology, music, and early childhood education, and he used it essentially. So, just go straight to the But Why Those, because we have a lot to cover. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is probably the biggest But Why Though, and the reason we're all here, and the reason we're here talking about him, and the reason we know him. So, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood began airing in 1968 and ran for 895 episodes.
Is that the most ever?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I think we've done this. You've brought it up on your episodes.
I know, but what I do find interesting is his show ran for so long, but why does it not seem like he pops up on, like, longest running show?
Because he took a break.
It's also public access television. And it's also that you do scripted time. It's scripted. They, like, break it down. Like, longest-running animation, longest-running scripted U.S. primetime television shows. It's not him. Oh, but if you do look at that list, he has more. Technically, he has more episodes than The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And that's the longest-running show at the moment.
For now.
At 6:39. Anyway.
I just looked it up. If you wanted to watch every episode of Mr. Rogers, it would take 18 days and 11 hours.
Oof. Down. I'm so down. New podcast, just watching Mr. Rogers episodes and talking about how his lessons from back then translate to now.
Perfect. A live commentary track with, like, Snoop, because what else is he doing these days?
Having a cooking show.
Oh, that's right. He does have that. But if he could do a Mr. Rogers commentary track podcast, I'd follow that.
I would too. Okay. So the last set of new episodes was taped in December 2000 and began airing in August 2001. At its peak in 1985, 8% of U.S. households tuned into the show. And the show was really important to him and really important to how people see children, like educational television, because he said that people often think that children's television is just stringing together cartoons, but to him, it was more about respecting children. And in fact, he said in multiple interviews that children are to be respected. This specifically meant that he didn't want to talk down to them. He didn't want to assume that they didn't know what was going on. He was very aware that children, like, people treat children like they're sheltered from everything. They don't see the bad stuff that happens. And Mr. Rogers, or Fred Rogers, he called him Mr. Rogers, but Fred Rogers said that that's not the way to do it. And so he specifically made this show with that in mind. Each episode began the same way. Mr. Rogers is seen coming home, singing his theme song, "Won't You Be My Neighbor," and changing into sneakers and a zipped cardigan sweater. He stated in an interview for METV that all of his sweaters were knitted by his mother. And he, I think it's that same interview, but he talks about he wanted to transition into the sweater as being like getting comfortable with people and letting them get comfortable with him, which is why he comes in with a jacket, puts the jacket up, puts on the sweater, and then when he leaves, he does the same process, just reverse.
I like it. Also, have you ever done that when you get home? Like, not like, not go like full into sweats, just like come home, put on a comfortable hoodie, take your shoes off, and just like go about your day. It is surprisingly nice.
I'm also not a fan of sweaters, and I do not like, and it makes me uncomfortable when people wear sweaters like that.
Cardigans?
Yes.
Cardigans make you uncomfortable?
Especially like the regular sweaters.
If it weren't 90 degrees outside, I was going to wear a cardigan for this recording.
Why do cardigans
make
you uncomfortable?
Like his little fluffy sweater? Not his like cardigan, the other like sweater things.
Why?
I don't like them.
But why do they make you uncomfortable?
Do you not trust them?
I do not trust them.
I mean, I think there's like a similar situation where he didn't like Killmonger's hair. Like, I don't think there's any rhyme or reason. I just don't think he likes it. He just doesn't like it.
Well, no, like, he said uncomfortable. He didn't say
what?
Like,
I do not
like,
I,
he
why
said
do
it
not,
made me uncomfortable.
I guess I do not trust the sweater. And most people that seem to wear sweaters like that cannot be trusted at some point. Bill Cosby wore a ton of sweaters.
Bill Cosby sweaters are nothing like Mr. Rogers sweaters.
Don't you dare compare Mr. Rogers sweaters to Bill Cosby sweaters. Don't put that,
like,
evil juju
actually,
on him.
A cardigan sweater is a little different than a normal sweater.
Does this just go back to you thinking that that nobody can be truly nice?
I don't know. I just know a cardigan sweater is obviously different, but then when you say, like, his sweaters were knitted by his mother, I'm thinking of just these, like, fluffy, ugly sweaters that you get for, like, the people who wear, like,
Have
Christmas
you seen
parties.
A no, that's not what
I know.
It
I know
is.
That is not it, but I just don't trust people in sweaters.
We'll go buy some cardigans.
They're adorable just little cardigans.
I mean, those are a little bad, but
I kind of want someone to make me a cardigan like that, because I don't know how to do it.
They're adorable.
I know, but when you say, like, sweater, like, when you say cardigan, I think like that. But then when you start saying sweater, I think, like, Bill Cosby.
A sweater. Cardigan is a sweater.
No, a sweater
is
totally
no,
different.
No, a cardigan is a sweater. Not every sweater is a cardigan.
Accurate.
Yes,
this
but
is the same
if you
way
say
hoodies
cardigan,
are sweaters.
But if you say cardigan, I'm okay. You start saying sweater.
You don't trust sweaters?
No.
I'm looking at knitting patterns online. I've completely checked out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find this. I'm trying to find a cardigan that looks like this to make.
Oh my god, Matt.
What? I don't like sweaters. Maybe I've also lived in the heat for so long in my life.
That might be
but
it.
But you didn't say that you didn't like them. You said they made you uncomfortable.
I know, because people that wear them are not trustworthy.
I don't know what to do with this episode now.
I'm sorry, but I don't like sweaters.
Here's what I'll say to bring this back. What I'm hearing from Matt makes sense in that if you've always lived in the South, you can't trust somebody wearing a sweater because it's too hot for them.
This is also very accurate.
Exactly. So I get Matt's distrust. I don't share it because I'm from the Northwest.
Like, Christmas parties with all ugly sweaters, like, it drives me crazy. I don't like them.
So, bringing this back around, what's a typical episode like, Kate?
Yeah, so in a typical episode, Rogers might have an earnest conversation with his television, interact with live guests, take a field trip to such places as a bakery or a music store, or even watch a short film. Each episode included a trip to Roger's neighborhood of make-believe, featuring a trolley with its own chiming theme song, a castle, and the kingdom's citizens, including King Friday the 13th, which was always my favorite. I know he's awful, but he was always my favorite.
That's terrible. It's actually awful. He should not be your favorite.
I love him.
Unless he's your favorite because he has, like, continual growth and, like, decides not to be as shitty, but, like, he literally put up a wall, like, episode one.
Yeah.
He said, build the wall. That's him.
He also decided to take over the entire broadcasting companies, and he made his own TV station and wouldn't let anybody in his kingdom watch anything but his TV.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
He was the cutest out of all of them. No, Daniel was.
Yeah, I was about to say Daniel.
All right, anyway.
I think Alex has, like, left the room between sweaters and now King Friday.
I'm looking at sweater patterns. No, I love King Friday the 13th. I love that his birthday is every Friday the 13th. I think he's wonderful.
He speaks to me on a spiritual level.
he just needs somebody to be nice to him. That's what he needs.
Yep. Is Matt King Friday the 13th?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, new opening question. Which puppet are you?
Oh!
I'm very disappointed. We need to fire you and put Alex as our opening question person.
Whatever. Okay, so the subjects discussed in the neighborhood of make-believe often allowed further development of themes in Mr. Rogers' real neighborhood. Visually, the presentation of the show was very, very simple, and it did not feature animation or was at a fast pace like other children's shows of the times, which Rogers thought of as more of a bombardment, and his focus is education entertainment. Rogers also believed in not acting out a different persona on camera compared to how he acted off camera, stating that one of the greatest gifts you can give anybody is the gift of being your honest self. I also believe that kids can spot a phony a mile away.
Back to the sweaters. Telling you.
But they trusted him in his sweater.
It was a cardigan.
Oh my god.
Cardigans are a kind of sweater, Matt.
But they're not the evil ones.
Matt makes a point.
What?
Oh my god. Rogers composed almost all of the music on the program. The recurring songs were all Rogers' work. Bits of incidental music, such as improvisations from members of the orchestra or music from guests to the program, were not composed by him, but everything else was. He wanted to teach children to love themselves and others, and he addressed common childhood fears with comforting songs and skits. Typically, each episode explored a major theme, such as going to school for the first time, but he also dove into a lot, like, deeper things. And even so much as it's songs and skits, it was also having a real conversation and confronting feelings. It was a show that met children where they were and didn't pretend like they lived in these perfect, innocent environments. He was more interested in making sure that a child could feel comfortable and understand what was happening in the world than he was in replicating that, you know, I guess not replicating, but sheltering them, essentially. It's his understanding that kids know what's happening in the world. They hear things. And instead of in pretending like they don't, so you don't have to have the hard conversations, Rogers had those conversations. He explained that children deserve to be spoken to like they were understanding things and speaking to them constructively and not talking down to them. He explained that the importance of tackling the drama of childhood, which was as simple as a haircut, to the anger that can happen in a family home, were all really important. He also explained that his show was an expression to care... He also explained that his show was an expression of care to children, that he empowered children by encouraging their individuality and making sure that feelings are mentionable and manageable, and what he saw as a huge step towards positive mental health. He also wanted to show that there was an importance to teaching children about their emotions, and he really fought back against ignoring how you're feeling and understanding that you can have a multitude of emotions. And he did this both with boys and girls. Most popularly, he has a song, What Do You Do With the Mad You Feel? And that actually came from a question he got from a child. And he decided to talk about that. And in that, he talks about how to use your anger constructively, like playing music. He explains how he would play music when he was angry, and slowly he'd realize as he kept playing, he wasn't angry anymore. And he also let you know that although certain types of expression weren't right, that having different ways of coping were. And he never just presented one thing when he talked about emotions. He tried to present a multitude of paths for children to take, understanding that they could be comfortable in different areas. He also had a show where Daniel the Tiger asked, what is assassination? And this was right after what?
Why would a tiger ask about assassination?
So Daniel, as a puppet, was essentially used as a vehicle to start all of these conversations. He's like a cowardly tiger, and he's really anxious and scared. And so the puppet is what he used to have these conversations, and the puppet would usually ask. So in the What is Assassination, he's having a conversation with one of the female guests, and they're talking, and then he just asks, you know, what is assassination? I've heard people saying it. And then she explains, like, essentially Daniel takes on the persona of, like, a child asking a question about something that they've felt, heard, but don't have the answers to.
Yeah. And from what I've seen from that that episode, they don't even get into the specific assassination that made him do that. Yeah. They just talk about it in very broad terms, like, always applicable. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, and that was right after RFK, which is a national moment that people felt. And he also did the same thing with 9/11. He came back. He actually had stopped recording at that time. Like, the last batch were recorded in 2000, but released in 2001. And he put back on his cardigan and came back to do a special episode talking about 9/11 and how it's okay to be scared, but understanding that there's more out there, which was, he essentially, it happened and he felt the need to come back to essentially his children, because he saw all of his audiences as his children. So he talked about really heavy stuff. He also took trips to children's hospitals, like around Pittsburgh, in order to show people that hospitals aren't a place to fear. During the Gulf War, 1990-91, he assured his audience that all children in the neighborhood would be well cared for and asked parents to promise to take care of their children. The message was aired again by PBS during the media storm that preceded the 2003 invasion of Iraq, and that's specifically talking about worrying about children in those other countries during war. He also talked about adoption. He had an episode talking about death, and he also talked about divorce. And one of the things that really spurred this was he took listener letters, and he made it his duty to read every single letter that came in from a child and to respond to it on the show. So everything that he's hearing are answering questions that real children had.
Yeah, that's also, if I remember right, why he announced when he was feeding his fish, because a blind girl wrote in asking if the fish were okay or something.
Aww.
And so he was like, all right, I guess I need to address that a little bit more vocally.
That's adorable. Yeah. And he essentially saw, like, the reason he started to do this was because after studying early childhood development and realizing how prominent television was becoming as a medium and how every house was getting one, he realized that television itself was going to end up being the thing that raises children, especially in houses where both parents work. It's a single parent household. You know, I watched a lot of TV growing up, and a lot of it was because I had to stay inside because my parents weren't home. Like, that, he saw that and he wanted to address that. So every show also ended with, you've made this day a special day by just being you. There's no person in the world like you. And I like you just the way you are. And he saw that as not only a sign-off, but understanding that he wanted children to feel safe, comforted, and okay in their own skins. And that's why he ended every episode that way. One of the really cool things, because he had been asked a lot about the really heavy subjects that he talked about. And what he said was, people long to be in touch with honesty. We're not going to fudge stuff. We're going to tell people the truth, and we're not going to dance around and say how happy things are when they're not. Because he was all about confronting your emotions and not hiding them.
He's so good. All of this is so good.
Yeah, I think just like some things that I just wanted to like highlight, just because I'm thinking back to the Mr. Rogers documentary, which
and I haven't seen it, so like insert that information. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
It is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. But one of the things I think I stuck out the most that I didn't really know was that he had a TV show like before Mr. Rogers, and he basically stopped doing it for like a lot of the reasons why you said, because it started turning into like kind of like a slapstick comedy thing. So he was like, his show was becoming the thing that he hated the most. And the other thing is like, what do you do with the mad you feel is so powerful that it basically like saved public television.
Oh yeah, it was part of his testimony, right?
Yeah, yep. He did the lyrics of that song in front of the Senate to save public education funding or public television funding, and it worked. Like,
which
that's
we'll
not
get to in the other butt way.
It's so good.
Yeah, powerful just from like, and that's just from his show. Like, that's straight from him and this Mr. Rogers TV show. Like, so even if it's generated towards kids, like the stuff that he was feeling and the things that he was trying to convey to kids was affecting, you know, grown men in Congress.
Public legislation.
Yeah, to change the way that we're doing things, which is super, super great.
Yeah. And I mean, and kind of on that, like, one of the things that I've always found most impressive and admirable about Fred Rogers is just the level of integrity. Like, there's the whole thing about, I want to be who I am on camera and off camera, but watching that documentary and realizing he really is just this good. Like, there was, like, maybe two or three things that they had as, like, critiques of him, and none of them were particularly damning. He was genuinely that nice of a person and really did believe the things that he was saying.
Yeah. The only thing that the documentary says that they didn't cover is, like, LGBTQ things.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah. But, like, even that wasn't that damning to the show, just because they kind of go into, like, how he's, like, not a terrible person.
Yeah. And really, if I remember right, it was that I forget, Francois, who played is that his name? Who played the mailman?
Yes.
Was seen at a gay nightclub, and it was, like, the late 60s, and Fred basically went to him and was like, you can't go back there, we will lose, we will lose every sponsorship and funding that we have. Because they won't support an openly gay man. And granted, he also wasn't super cool about it, but he came around eventually, and they kind of touch on that too.
And that goes into our next topic, which is breaking boundaries. So essentially what he did was he was confronting racism head on by bringing on Francois Clemens, a black man, a police officer, which for children's education, there wasn't a lot of representation there. And he actually had a recurring role as Officer Clemens and in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and specifically in a 1969 episode, Rogers invited Clemens to sit with him and put his feet in a small pool of water. And this was really important because at the time, black communities were being barred from entering swimming pools, and you still have a lot of segregation being weeded out. And they also reenacted the scene in 1993. And Clemens talked about how he invited me to come over and rest my feet in the water with him. The icon Fred Rogers not only was showing my brown skin in the tub with his white skin as two friends, but as I was getting out of the tub, he helped me dry my feet. And that was something that was specifically, it was really powerful because at that time in the 60s, that type of interaction was not shown. And the fact that Fred was helping him dry himself as he came out showed that Fred saw him as an equal, which is, like, really powerful at the time. And essentially, like, Clemens also said, like, they didn't want black people to come and swim in their swimming pools. And by my being on the program, it was a statement for Fred. Now, like y'all just mentioned, he was extremely revolutionary, and he wasn't extremely revolutionary in the fact that Clemens was gay and he knew it, and he asked him to keep it quiet. And when they spoke to his wife in an interview, I think it was for Good Morning America, she said that it was because of there was a part of him who was terrified of losing the parents that controlled the televisions. and he didn't want them to turn off the TV and the kids lose the support that he was giving them. And he essentially saw it as, like, taking his kids. But the interviewer pressed her, like, he kind of, because Rogers was a Christian, the interviewer kind of, like, put, well, was this a religious thing? Would he still be the same way today? And she said, no, I don't think he would be the same way, because now we're in a different time, and, you know, so... Yeah. That's the only negative thing I had from everything I looked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way that the documentary portrays it, because they kind of like have a moment with, because Francois Clemens is in like the documentary,
yeah,
and he's reflecting back on it himself, and he never felt like it was a Fred didn't like him because he was a gay man. He was just really worried about kind of protecting what he had. But in the end, Francois knew that Fred, you know, cared about him like a son, basically. So even, you know, Francois didn't have like any ill will towards like this situation in particular that you just talked about.
Yeah, and there was another interview that I saw with Francois, and he was actually crying when he was talking about being invited on the show and being shown in that light.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was revolutionary at the time.
Yeah, yeah, and in the documentary, he actually talks about how he also was a little bit reluctant to specifically play a cop.
Yeah, because he did not want to. Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, oh, what?
He was like, I did not want to be a cop.
Yeah. He was another one of those things where, because he's like, he's super young, like when he starts it, and then like he gets to be kind of older in the end. And I remember like tripping out on that, like as a kid, like, is this the same cop? Is this his son?
Right when in the documentary, they show the clip of when he came back in the 90s to redo the foot washing thing. And I was like, that can't be the same guy. Like, that, it doesn't look like the younger version of him. It doesn't look like the older version of him. Like,
yeah.
And beyond this, too, like, if you can't tell by now, he actually did things. He was an advocate, and he took his advocacy seriously. And I think it's really important, especially given, like, the climate that we're in now and how easy it is to speak up about things, but very few people actually do things. In his advocacy, Fred always backed it up. Specifically, to what you guys were talking about, him testifying before Congress. In 1969, Rogers appeared before the United States Senate Subcommittee on Communications, and his goal was to support funding for PBS and the Corporation of Public Broadcasting in response to proposed budget cuts. In about 6 minutes of testimony, and you can find, I'll include it in the show notes, and it's all online. They have that entire testimony. I watched it before, while I was making the notes, Rogers spoke of the need for social and emotional education that public television provided. He argued that alternative television programming, like his neighborhood, helped encourage children to become happy and productive citizens, sometimes opposing less positive messages in the media and in popular culture. He recited the lyrics to one of his songs, which is what Adrian mentioned, the What to Do with the Mad You Feel, and one of the people, when you watch the testimony, one of the guys on the subcommittee asked, can I get a copy of your show? Can I watch it? And he's like, I don't know how you can, but I'd love if you watch my episodes. And they were really moved by it. Rogers' testimony is now famous specifically for advocating that the government fund children's television. He explained the importance of his show, and they really did listen. The chairman of the subcommittee, John O. Pastor, was not familiar with Rogers' work and was sometimes described as impatient. However, he reported that the testimony had given him goosebumps and declared, I think it's wonderful. Looks like you just earned the $20 million. The subsequent congressional appropriation for 1971 increased PBS funding from $9 million to $22 million. So, like, yeah, he did it.
I think this also states, once again, why we have problems with the fact that, like, people didn't even know about a show. Decisions.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Which I think speaks to a more louder problem we have with a lot of these things than anything else.
Yeah, that they're making decisions on stuff that they have no idea about. Yeah. And then next you have the Betamax case, and this is actually a really big case. specifically when it comes to copyright and stuff like that. So during the controversy surrounding the introduction of the household VCR, Rogers was involved in supporting VCR manufacturers in court. His 1979 testimony in the case Sony Corporation of America versus Universal Studios noted that he did not object to home recordings of his own television programs by families in order to watch them together at a later time. His testimony contrasted with the views of others in the television industry who objected to home recording or believed that VCRs should be taxed or regulated. And so this big problem was essentially them just worried that they weren't going to be making money off their shows and people wouldn't be tuning in because they could just record it and send it out to whoever they want. And it's kind of similar to what we're doing now with streaming services, because those numbers aren't really tracked when networks make decisions. Bring back Constantine.
But if we haven't learned anything, you should just know that unless the government's getting green, it doesn't really matter.
Pretty much. So when the case reached the Supreme Court in 1983, the majority decision considered the testimony of Rogers when it held that the Betamax video recorder did not infringe on copyright. The court stated that his views were a notable piece of evidence that many television producers are willing to allow private time shifting to continue, and even quoted his testimony in the footnote, which was this: some public stations, as well as commercial stations, program the neighborhood at hours when children cannot use it. I have always felt that with the advent of all this new technology that allows people to tape the neighborhood off the air, and I'm speaking for the neighborhood because that's what I produce, that they then become much more active in the programming of their family's television life. Very frankly, I am opposed to people being programmed by others. My whole approach in broadcasting has always been, you are an important person just the way you are. You can make healthy decisions. Maybe I'm going on too long, but I just feel that anything that allows a person to be more active and in control of his or her own life in a healthy way is important.
Yeah. There's just so much to unpack there, and I think it's interesting
unpack
that...
Unpack it!
I mean, okay, so the first thing is, like, just in terms of who he is as a person, like, starting off with recognizing that there are decisions being made that impact children that they have no say over with when it's going to be scheduled. And why would we not take advantage of this technology? Like, for being someone who seems so old-fashioned, like, between this and the fact that he saw television as a tool to be leveraged, like, he's pretty forward-thinking.
Yeah.
And then even, you know, talking about, like, if this is going to enable not just kids to watch my show, but for families to come together. Like, he was, like, giving a lot of his priorities. I think it's really interesting that he caught himself and said, I'm only talking about my show because that's what I produce.
Yeah.
And not assuming to speak for others. And then even at the end, like, that took you, what, 30 seconds to read? And he said, maybe I'm going on too long. Like, just so much, like, so considerate and so kind and thinking about other people and how things impact other people that are and are not in their control. And yeah, like, it's just a damn good argument for why you should be allowed to record at home, which the fact that they made up the term time shifting for it is,
yeah,
it's great and a little bit extra. Like,
I mean, it's the U.S. government. They're extra on things.
That's true. But yeah. Time shifting. Like, I don't know, but yeah.
I wonder if this, like, same thing happened with DVR and stuff.
Oh, I wonder. I think DVR people were probably more comfortable with, because I think it was harder to get recordings off of a TiVo without expertise than it would be to
share around.
To, like, pop out a VCR, yeah, or a VHS and give it to your neighbor.
Yeah. True. Any questions?
No, I'm just loving this.
Nope, I'm good.
So ultimately, he is no longer with us. He was diagnosed with stomach cancer in 2002, and he ended up dying later, a year later in 2003, really close after he stopped his show. His death was such a significant event in Pittsburgh that most of the front page of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, published the next day, was an entire section of the paper devoted to coverage of him. The Reverend William P. Barker presided over a public memorial in Pittsburgh where more than 2,700 people attended at Heinz Hall. At the 2003 Daytime Emmy Awards, host Wayne Brady and some of the cast of Sesame Street, including Big Bird, Elmo, Gromer, Zoe, and Rosita, paid tribute to Rogers by singing a medley of some of his most popular songs. Once they finished, a small clip of Rogers accepting an Emmy was played, which led the audience to give a standing ovation. And on New Year's Day, 2004, Michael Keaton, who was actually a stagehand on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood before becoming an actor, hosted the PBS TV special, Fred Rogers, America's Favorite Neighbor. And a memorial statue was unveiled in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 2009. As of 2018, in January, they announced that Tom Hanks would portray Mr. Rogers in an upcoming biographical film titled You Are My Friend, directed by Marielle Heller. And recently, the documentary that you all mentioned, Won't You Be My Neighbor, came out in theaters. And there is actually a spinoff type show that is currently being made for kids called Daniel Tiger. And it's the son of Daniel Striped Tiger that Fred used as his puppet, and it covers a lot of the exact same themes. Yeah, so Fred's Rogers' message is still going out.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I just know that the Draft House played a clip of it before the documentary, and you can definitely feel like the Mr. Rogers, you know, message in that, in like the animation. So it's super, super cool that they use Daniel the Tiger. It's just really great. Super great. Glad they did it.
And then my favorite quote, I just wanted to share it because I was looking through stuff and I've read so many of his quotes that people have. And it's that love isn't a state of perfect caring. It is an action noun like struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way he or she is right here and now. He just has a whole bunch of little words of wisdom, and it's so good.
What's your favorite quote? Alex,
my favorite Mr. Rogers quote. That is a really good question. Let me consult this mug that I have that has a lot of quotes from him on it.
Hey, we can see your face now.
Oh yeah, and maybe the mug. I can't. I don't. I like you just the way you are. That is such a good one for me, and it sums up so many things. All of the positivity and the encouragement. I don't know that it's any one quote really boils it down better than that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Adrian?
I think the one that stands out the most to me is I remember watching this one as a kid, where he's drawing the house, and he's I'm not very good at it, but that's all right. You know, it just feels good to do things, and you don't have to be the best at them. And as someone who thought I had to be the best at everything because, you know, family stuff, you know how that is, Kate. It was very powerful to hear as a kid. Mr. Rogers is amazing, and he's drawing this terrible house, but he's just having fun doing it, and that's more important than making it perfect.
It's also a meme now.
Mm-hmm. Just I share it every year. I was how's life going? I'm not very good at it, but it doesn't matter.
Can you imagine Mr. Rogers following along with a Bob Ross video?
Oh, that would be adorable.
Him and Bob Ross in the same room.
Just hanging out, learning how to paint. I might die if I see that.
That's too much positive energy in one room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, I'm not going to ask you what your favorite quote is, because
I don't have a favorite quote.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask me another question, but apparently not. Never mind.
What's your favorite color sweater that he wore?
None.
The Draft House also did a synchronization thing of how all the color sweaters that he wore from episode 1 to episode 890 whatever.
Oh, wow.
And it was just really cool to watch the transformation of how well his mom got at making sweaters.
I've made it through this episode, and I've remained positive, and so I feel I've done a lot for this episode.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to share your final thoughts first, because I didn't know what other question to ask you.
I'm slowly dying inside, and it hurts.
Have you all seen the American Dad episode where Roger's nice all the time, and he starts dying?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's Matt.
Yeah.
He's just a statistical anomaly as a person.
Definitely is.
That's fine, but statistical anomalies are just that. They're just anomalies.
You're a statistical anomaly being left-handed.
He's got a point.
Not, no. Yes, but no.
I feel like there have to be more nice people than left-handed people.
I don't buy that.
Just statistically speaking, I hope that we break that. That we break that there's more nice people than left-handed people.
I would hope so.
I don't buy that, though.
You also just don't believe that people can be entirely nice. But all I know is this dude's entire life has been dissected, and there is literally nothing wrong that he's ever done.
The things that the documentary finds are, there's the thing with Francois, and that when he got older, he got a little curmudgeon-y about, like, I have the right way of making a kid's show. And if those are, like, the two pieces of dirt that you can find, that's pretty good.
I know, that's really good.
If we go back and, like, look at, you know, back to, like, that list... Like, how many of those people, like, has stuff come out with that we found out that they are actually terrible people and they were just faking being nice?
You know what the interesting thing with those pictures? A lot of those people were wearing sweaters at the time, too.
Oh, my God, Matt!
But, because they were bigger than... But, yes, I know that's a thing. And I guess it's one of those... I have not once said he was a bad person. I mean, he is good, and like I said, we've stayed positive, and those two gripes are very bad, because obviously, if you've done it the best, and I can see you being curmudgeon... And two, like, obviously it's a totally different time frame. It's so hard to, like, even cool hearing about it. I didn't watch the show. I probably will never watch the show. I watched The Family Guy and some of the other spinoffs where they actually have him being a secret bad guy, which was kind of entertaining.
Oh, that was a great thing they put in the documentary, too, of, like, him reacting to, like, the spinoffs. Like, especially, like, the ones that were just, like, mean about it. And he just... It seems like he just took him, like, on the chin and just kept going with it. He didn't seem angry about any of that stuff. Even his wife was just like, I think they got to him, but he just kind of, like, just rolled with it and then went, like, back to doing him.
What did she say? Like, the only ones that ever really bothered him were the ones that attacked the philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, like, anything that was just, like, kind of, like, poking fun at, like, the structure or at him, it was like, oh, whatever. Like, as long as you don't have a problem with the message.
I could see that.
I mean, sure. His message was great.
You just look like you're dying inside.
When I mail you those scissors, it's going to be wrapped in a cardigan. You're going to have to, like, confront what scares you to get what you need.
I mean, I just don't think that, like, it's that hard to live up to kind of, like, his message. Because his message isn't, like, be a nice person all the time. Or, like, be like me, like, I'm, like, the person to be. So, like, the difference between this and just kind of, like, back, like, harken back to, like, our Captain America episode, like, where he's kind of, like, the symbol of virtue and things like that, and we want to be like Captain America, I would just want to be like Mr. Rogers wants me to be. Like, am I being the person that Mr. Rogers thinks I should be? Like, saying hi to people and, like, doing nice things
and it's also too,
when I,
like,
can.
And it's not even about doing nice things when you can. Like, his whole message was, like, understanding that you're going to fall. And you're going to have really crappy emotions, and you're going to be sad sometimes, and you're going to want to punch people sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You just have to deal with them. And, like, that is really strong, because, like, he talked about mental health in his subcommittee interview, or his subcommittee testimony. And at that time, like, mental health isn't even really a thing. They were still dunking people in bathtubs and shocking the crap out of them and locking them up in, like, institutions.
Yeah.
And he was talking about making sure that you maintain kids' mental health by teaching them how to cope with these emotions. So, like, it's really weird, too, which I guess, like, my thing is, like, I don't even see Fred Rogers' message as be nice to people. Or, like...
When I say be nice to people, I just mean, like, just... It's kind of like the rules of fandom. Like, just don't be a dick. Just don't be a dick. It's like, it's not, like, that entirely hard. Like, and if people were less of dicks to each other at least, like, half the time, like, how much nicer would, like, the world be?
And it's okay
if you're a dick sometimes, but just know, like, how that affects people. And then, you know,
and
just
that's
don't
my
be a
thing
dick all
the
time.
Like,
but that's, like, what's hurting me at this point, because, like, you're like, oh, when I draw that house and it looks like garbage, but I feel great about it. And I look at it and I'm like, this looks awful. Why would you ever feel great about this?
Because you tried and you had a good time doing it.
And you're like, I have a good time doing it. And I'm like, that's cool, but it looks awful.
Do you ever play games that you suck at?
No, he doesn't.
Oh.
Well, there's been very few ones that I've sucked at.
Humble, Matt. I've always said that about you.
No, he's a perfectionist. There's a reason we don't play PUBG, and he hated playing PUBG because he wasn't good at it.
I didn't mind playing it. I played it with you guys. I don't personally like, I get bored because a lot of times we run around and do nothing for like lots amounts of time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think your like positionality is fine. Like, you're a perfectionist. So like for you, like
I don't think you could draw the best house ever. Like, you're not going to be artists and people are going to pay you like everybody thinks they're going to do these days. Like, oh, I can draw a house, like, pay me. But you should do better than something that looks like a trash can.
I took it, like, because, like Adrian said, like, literally my entire life was about perfection growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be the best of everything. That's why I had to maintain a fucking top 10%, like, GPA while I was working two jobs in high school. Like, that was expected of me. But, like, if one person had said, like, it's okay to not do something perfect one time. Like, that is really,
I guess,
really
the point
impactful.
I'm looking at is,
yeah,
it's okay if you don't make the 99, but do not be happy because you made the 68.
And I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's saying that, like, it's okay to do something because you enjoy it. And he's also saying it's okay to fail sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's,
yeah,
not
that's,
the end
that was
of the
another
world
thing.
If you fail.
And that was another thing that they covered in the documentary, too, of, like, the backlash of, like, people thinking that he was just promoting this, like, perfect, and for, like, lack of better terms, like, snowflake culture thing. And that's never what I got out of watching it myself.
Because
I
look like...
And I don't know anyone who did either, who, like, actually
yeah.
watched the
oh,
show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I didn't say I watched the show, but to me it's one of those, like, I'm not saying it's not okay to fail. You should know you're going to fail, but you should not accept failing.
Well, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think literally telling a child...
I mean, that is fine.
...in preschool that it's okay to not be... Like, if you fail, it's not the end of the world. Because, like, I used to give myself ulcers when I got bad grades on tests as a kid. Because it was expected to be perfect. Like, I've told you before. Like, I got a 95. My mom said, you can do better. If you were retarded, I would expect nothing out of you. But you're not, so go get 100. 5 more points. Not that hard. Like, hearing those messages as a kid. Like...
But
being able to
I guess
draw
on the flip
house
side of
is kind of
the flip
okay.
side of coin, do you think you would be where you are today without those?
No.
You think you'd be close to where you're at?
No.
Would you think you'd be driven as much as you are to do a lot of stuff that we do?
No, but I still
do
wish
think
I
would have less ulcers.
Oh, but, and also to throw a wrench in this.
I would have less ulcers. But on top of that, the only reason I am where I am today is because I quit my PhD program.
Yeah.
Old me would not have done that.
And also to put a wrench in this, my parents never told me that I had to get perfect grades or that I had to 100% things. They just wanted me to put in effort. That was literally all that was asked of me. And then I turned out how I did.
Yeah, like, I don't think, like, you can tie it all to that because, honestly, like...
I'm not like, tying all of it to that. You're just assuming I'm tying all of it to
well,
that.
Well, you said, would you be here without it? But, like, in this... If I had only stuck to that message, I would be miserable in my PhD program right now.
That's fine. So you learned and adapted, but
yeah,
I'm talking
I
about
learned,
in general.
I learned that it was okay to fail sometimes and just walk away from things.
Right.
Which is all Mr. Rogers was trying to teach the little children, Matt.
I mean, okay. Like, I didn't say he wasn't at this point.
I'm confused.
I just know if you draw a shitty house, I'm going to tell you you draw a shitty house.
He didn't need you to tell me you draw
again,
a shitty house.
Again, parenting advice with Matt, new podcast.
I think it'd be a problem if he thought he drew an amazing house and didn't accept
yeah.
that it was a shitty house. Like, that's
yeah.
a bigger problem to me.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
yeah.
probably that's probably
yeah.
very
that's probably, like, it's, because I think that's what you're pointing out.
Because
like,
he, what he said did... is, like, I drew this house, I loved it. And I love doing it, and I'm like, but it's terrible.
Yeah, he loved doing it. He knows that the house is bad, and I hope that he would try harder next time. Which I'm sure he would, because he's Mr. Rogers. He would just call up Bob Ross, and they would just hang out and... draw paintings and draw houses.
And Yo-Yo Ma would sit in the corner and play music for them.
Yes! Yes!
Which, man, there was a lot of Yo-Yo Ma in that documentary. I was not expecting that.
I mean, I get it, and I stayed positive, and y'all just had to go ask me. And I like Alex, and I like Alex have fun on our episodes.
I'm glad.
I don't know if he has more fun laughing at us or being here talking, but
no,
still.
I genuinely enjoy the conversation. And I like all of you as people.
I don't know. Like I said, I know why this inspired many people, and I get it all, and that's cool and stuff and whatnot, but I obviously, like I said, I never watched the show. I never cared to watch the show. Nobody ever told me to watch the show.
And if it's not for you, that's all right.
I said that's not, and that's why you're not empathetic.
It's also
didn't get that early childhood education.
Now, depending on whether you keep it or not, like I've argued this before, of like coming from a lot of standpoints, like emotion and feelings are the weakest point of being a human.
They're the best part.
Well, that's also the weakest.
It's what makes us human.
It makes us human, but it's also the, like the number one weakness.
And that's fine, and that's why
weakness from an evolutionary standpoint.
Actually, yes.
But like from a survival evolutionary standpoint, because we don't have to do as much to survive anymore. Like it's okay to let your guard down.
I think that Fred Rogers realized that when people don't process their emotions correctly, it is one of our greatest weaknesses, which is why his main message was teaching children how to handle these things early.
That's on this mug.
No.
When we can talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary.
Which I think is good, because obviously we know we have a problem with a lot of parents sheltering kids in general, which is why the whole thing was great. I'm trying.
It's okay. I love you just...
Yeah, I like you just the way you are.
Hold on. Where's the line? You've made this day a special day by you being just you. There's no person in the world like you, and I like you just the way you are, Matt.
I think it's also hard for me to grasp that every day is actually special.
Why not? Today's never going to happen again.
Yeah, but what did we do today that was so special?
I don't know, but it's one in what? Trillions? Quadrillions?
I learned that you are uncomfortable by sweaters.
That's true. That's going to stick with her.
I'm telling you, look up all the people with sweaters. And even Freddy Krueger was in a sweater.
It's not the same sweater, though. That's not a cardigan, was it? No, he's not in a cardigan.
No.
Anyway, we have but why those, and there's a lot of them. Okay, Adrian, final thoughts.
Final thoughts, I think, just from watching the documentary, then just kind of having everything kind of reaffirmed through your eloquent and always amazing notes. I think the aspect of Mr. Rogers' like effect on me, like as like my through my development, is super prominent. It's super hard to be like Mr. Rogers. I remember watching the documentary. I was like, I'm going to be nicer to people, and then I got back on Twitter, and it's really hard. But I'm trying my best to be the person.
Weren't you just fighting with somebody yesterday, or like the day before?
If you take a swing at the king, you better not miss.
Oh, God.
But I'm just trying to be more of the person that Mr. Rogers would like me to be as I enter a classroom with kids. But I think past that, just learning from the documentary and then learning about the VCR piece that I didn't know about, like he used his power for like good. Like he was like that all, not all heroes wear capes. Some heroes wear sweater vests. And go to Supreme Court and like argue legislation where for real change to happen, which I think is super, super great. Because I don't know how many of the other stars on that list went to go give talk to Supreme Court to advocate for the importance of what they do every day.
Into it.
One, why is Kate's note so lovely and better?
I was just trying to be nice. I'm trying to be nice, man. I'm just trying.
He's trying to live the way Mr. Rogers wanted him to.
Yeah.
Which he just said.
I know.
If you're wondering, you can become a patron and see Matt's lovely notes from our Mission Impossible episode, which were also very lovely.
I have a lot of notes.
It was a good episode.
Yeah, thank you. Was it good, or was it good because they just laughed the whole time at me while I tried to talk?
I legitimately felt like I learned a lot about that series that I did not know. I will also say that there were points where I was laughing with them.
You can't not laugh at Impossible Missions Force.
God, it's so bad. It was a 60, also, so at the point in the episode where it goes quiet for a minute and then Adrian just starts laughing and says, I'm sorry, it's just a stupid name.
I thought you were going to bring up Tom Cruise, you short bastard.
That was also perfect.
And that's quality content coming from Matt's episodes.
Always.
And I appreciate you always, just the way you are, Matt.
I feel like that's a lie in some way.
Anyway, since I kind of, like, gave my whole story or whatever, I just wish that I had probably watched Mr. Rogers more as a kid.
Yeah, same.
Because I didn't start watching him until I was a little bit older and stuff. Because we were... I don't remember why, actually. I'm just saying, I personally wish that I internalized a lot more of his messages than I did.
Yeah.
Because it would have helped me a lot. Because it's okay to not be very good at something if you just want to have fun doing it.
Truth.
I do things I'm not very good at, too.
You just said who does things that they're not very good at for fun.
No. I said, what was the point of doing that?
Well, the...
The fun of it.
I interact with you all.
Yeah, and we appreciate you because we know you're doing your best.
I know.
Even if you're not very good at it. Being nice, we know you're trying. And that's all that matters.
I know you're dying inside a little bit right now.
A little bit.
Should we just do my butt why though and put the nail in that coffin?
Yes, please. Yes. I'm really gonna do the fan ones.
Yeah. So here's the little bit that I wrote, and then was like, I'm just gonna cut myself off way sooner than the Captain America one.
The Captain America one was really powerful, though.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Mr. Rogers matters because everyone needs a neighbor to be treated with kindness, cared for, supported, and loved. Fred was everyone's neighbor, and he taught a lot of us how to be a neighbor. The world seems to have taken a dark turn as of late, but people like Mr. Rogers remind us that we have a choice, that we can turn the other way, and that we can be a neighbor instead of a stranger, and bring light to the world around us.
Aww.
And that's it.
That was going to be my last question. Do we need him now?
Oh, here's the thing, though. We don't. We need his influence. We don't need him. There's a thing in the documentary where they're talking to the guy who runs the Fred Rogers Center, and he says that, you know, people talk about, like, well, what would Mr. Rogers do? And he said the question isn't what Mr. Rogers would do. It's what will you do?
Oh, so good in the thing.
And it's just like, because honestly, I think that we're at this point culturally where we're more comfortable with Fred Rogers as a myth than as a man. Because if he was a man, we suddenly have a lot less of an excuse to be the way that we are. Because suddenly who he was is achievable and it's mortal.
That's why I love you guys. But that's also why you need me, like an H.
What?
I'm like H for all of you guys.
What does that mean?
If you watched our movie, his name was H.
That was his name?
Samuel Jackson was H. Yes, he was.
Oh, God. No, Matt. Anyway, here are the fan but why those. The first one is, these are all from Twitter, as usual. This is from
One day we might actually try to embrace other people on different platforms.
This is just easier. It's all on my phone.
Yeah.
Well, Facebook's all on your phone. We used to have a lot of those.
Anyway, you can do that.
I hate Facebook.
So from our from at Lizzie Lynn Garcia, she is actually our assistant editor for our website.
So a lovely blogger and a new lovely patron.
Oh, yeah. And we said thanks to her earlier.
I'm saying thank you to her again. I'm trying to be Mr. Rogers. Get with it.
I watched him a lot as a child, but even now his voice is incredibly soothing, although learning how he saved public access TV is heroic. And then this is from at Ice Know Nothing. He was a personal hero. I'll never stop trying to live up to the potential he saw in all of us. I became a nanny and educator in large part because of the example and ideals that Fred McFeely Rogers represented to so many. I felt a calling to work with kids, and my time watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood feels inextricably tied to that. It's from at Madcap Munchkin. I grew up watching him. By the time I came along, there were only about 10 years or so left of the show. But he was a fixture of my childhood. He cared deeply about education and helping children to better understand the world in which they lived in. He was a shining light in this world. A kind and generous man. A wonderful soul. It is a great pity that he is gone when the world needs him more than ever. And from my mother... And this is his butt wife from his mother, who did grow up watching him almost from the jump. There was something about him that was so unusual. The way he behaved was so different. Nothing a child could articulate. But in retrospect, you realize that there was something so compelling about him for children who felt like they were missing kindness and understanding and patience. That he really taught so many of us how to be a good person. That's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And powerful. This is from at @emphasis_nest. He was always a friendly face on my TV screen when I was a kid. And this is from at @ersetsash.
Another one of our lovely bloggers.
I lost my mom when I was pretty young, and I didn't know how to process all the things I was feeling. And Mr. Rogers' neighborhood had no small part in helping me understand my emotions and make me feel like it was okay to feel them. And I will always be grateful for that. From at Kathy E. Kohler. Mr. Rogers is a standard by which I judge my conduct towards others. Each person I encounter deserves nothing less. From at Miss Carr 2015, he was like an emotional, warm, fluffy blanket. I don't remember specific plot points from episodes, but I remember how I felt. Mr. Rogers always made me feel happy, no matter what else was going on in the world. From at BT Murphy 88, Mr. Rogers was a Presbyterian minister. I've been Presbyterian my whole life. He showed me that my religion doesn't have to be what the loudest among us purported as, but it should, but that it should be inclusive, caring, and warm. I was in the library of Presbyterian Church, and they had a signed copy of his book. I bawled when I realized that he had held the book that was in my hands. From at CJ Pendragon. As a child, he was a major influence on my developing moral compass. The modern spinoff has helped my kids a lot in learning how to deal with common life situations and aided my disabled son in using words and accepting anger and other complex emotions. At Bearing Moon, I can't even respond to this. I just feel like sobbing. He was one of a kind, such a gentle spirit, but you could sense his anger when he witnessed injustice, and he always made it a point to do something about it in his gentle yet direct way. I miss that man. At Cheryl Gustafson, he trusted kids to engage with their feelings when sad, happy, confused, scared, or angry. He held our hand, so to speak, as he talked with us, helping us figure out how to work through our feelings. From at Michael Alex Penn, to me, seeing a man with a kind and soft attitude was highly important. On top of that, the emphasis given to using one's imagination is something that isn't all that often shown in a positive light. From at Known Good Geek, was fascinated by puppets and lessons taught to me as a kid, not down to me like in school. So used to the weird being bigger even than adult Sesame Street, i.e. Big Bird, that was nice to have characters who were smaller, more intimate in plot and lessons, was a huge part of my childhood. From at Gatsu083, another one of our patrons, thank you so much, Charles. He taught acceptance. He taught strength and courage. He taught that the greatest achievement is to be good and be who you are. He taught that the pursuit of a goal was more desirable than the goal itself sometimes. And he taught me how crayons are made.
And you know what? He wasn't very good with those crayons.
And that's okay.
You know what? I do not actually like crayons.
I mean, as a left-handed person, I totally get it. There's a lot into this. We'll talk about it later.
from at Nico the Aurora, one of our patrons and one of our
lovely bloggers.
He addressed a lot of life's darkest topics and fears that came with them to younger children. He helped them understand. His entire work is something spectacular. He had a way of explaining things in such a simple yet unique manner. I promise we're almost done. From at Angel T18, he taught that it was okay to be you no matter who you were, that you could be loved and that you were deserving of that love, and no one could refute that. I'll always be grateful to him for that. And finally, from at CJ Write Things, one of our
lovely bloggers,
he taught me that in a world that will kick you down, the best thing to do is to stand up and be kind. And I think I'm going to end the show with, instead of going with outro music, sorry, Alex.
No, that's totally fine.
With a look for the helpers.
Yes.
Piece that he had, which his mom told him that when disasters happen, don't think about the disaster. Look at all the people that are helping.
The only thing I wanted to say, like, before we go out, I don't know if y'all remember, like when the internet like first got big, all the stuff came out about Mr. Rogers, about like him being like a naval sniper and like being in like Vietnam.
Oh, and having tattoos, and that's why he wore cardigans.
Tattoos, yeah. And like that he was gay and all that stuff. Like that's like
literally none of that's true.
None of it's true. The internet is a terrible place. Don't think any of that, please.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure we get that in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is true. Oh, shit, and I actually found people have more Mr. Rogers things. There are more Mr. Rogers things.
And okay, this is actually another thing about it that's really cool. So I went to see the movie this last Tuesday when we recorded this, and the movie's been out for a few weeks now, yeah? Still a packed theater, full of people from all different backgrounds and ages who wanted to see this film because, like, we still yearn for that level of kindness in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, watching, like, Coco, like, people were emotional in Coco, but, like, this was, like, people, because there's a piece in it, like, where they ask you to, like, think about someone who, like,
matters. Oh, yeah, spend 1 minute.
Yeah, people, like, looked at the people that they were with. It's just so powerful. Like, you can just, like, feel. Yeah, it's just great. Go watch it, Kate. It's great. Yeah.
And I'll put all of these in there, but I do want to get some of these longer ones.
Yeah.
Because they're really good. So at Marky Sutter, I watched him well into middle school, and occasion would watch him when I caught the show Channel Surfing into adulthood. He had a way of making everyone feel special and important. That's a real man. Then there's also from at 3CTA Philly 8, the most pure celebrity to exist, saw the goodness in everything, and that was evident in the show. Was also one of the two shows I was allowed to watch as a child, Sesame Street being the other, so he was my introduction to television programming. And then from at Check the Circuit, he was an emotional and moral guide when I was growing up. He talked about feelings in a way that I could understand. He knew exactly what I was going through and make it all comprehensible. He wanted me to know how to be a good person. He was my hero. Yeah. Emma from at MNara says, I met him twice on separate occasions as a kid and once as a teenager. And I just remember how he was the exact same person as he was on TV. I think that's it.
Really
and
good.
If you're listening to this right now, and I left it out, it's because I opened up Twitter while we were talking, and I had 32 new notifications, and they were just a lot of love for Mr. Rogers.
And rightly so.
Yeah, is this the most we've had? Like,
I think it is the most we've had in a while.
Oh, in a while, yes.
If not the most. Because I'm not even looking at our podcast Twitter. That was just from mine.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all motherfuckers better listen to this episode.
That somehow was going to slip into it. I'm pretty sure.
It's also funny reading those names and listening to all that stuff. And I'm like, I follow your Twitter. You should be ashamed saying this.
Anyway. Okay. Alex, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at MostAlwaysAlex, and then I host a couple of podcasts, What We Talk About When We Talk About, which is a pop culture podcast, much like But Why Though, and Game Boys, which is a co-op gaming podcast, and Friday.com, where if you like horror movies, we review and bring some news, and it's a good time.
Awesome. And as always, rate, review, and subscribe to us. And make sure you follow us and interact with us on Twitter. We're very active on there, at ButWhyThoughPC. And you can find me at OhMyMythRandier on Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuyz93.
Matt?
I don't really got anything.
Can we find...
Oh, yeah, Matt's trying to scrub himself off the internet.
I got it. You can find me not drawing a house. Or wait, I am drawing a house. Is that better?
Yes.
Try to draw a house. I actually used to be able to draw pretty good houses.
You should tweet out pictures of houses that you've drawn.
Don't have any more. I'm not very good at art.
You can make some new ones.
And that's okay, Matt.
But I don't see the point in doing that.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry I took away your choice of music, but I just really wanted
to. No, that is a beautiful choice.
Like,
I'm into it.
It's so good.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot.
You know, my mother used to say a long time ago, whenever there would be any really catastrophe that was in the movies or on the air, she would say, always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. That's why I think that if news programs could make a conscious effort of showing rescue teams, of showing who medical people, anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy, to be sure that they include that. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.